Jovan Buha! Buha!
Yo, yo! I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block, and welcome to another episode. On today's show, I'm thrilled to be joined by my co-host of the Lakers Collective. You also know him as the host of Lakers Nation, Basketball Bulletin, the Front Office Show, on and on. He is everywhere on NBA YouTube. Trevor Lane, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the show. Excited to spend another day talking Lakers basketball with you. Always a treat when we get to talk Lakers basketball. So happy to be on here.
I saw you yesterday. I'm seeing you today. I'm going to see you tomorrow. And we're hanging out all week. On today's episode, we are going to be grading the Lakers supporting cast. But I felt that was a little boring. So I was like, let's mix it up here and spin this forward. And so I want to look back on the season for each player, the regular season and the playoffs quickly. But I also want to look ahead. And with LA having so many pivotal decisions this summer, whether they want to operate as a cap space team or an above the cap team, they have all these decisions they have to make with all of these guys. So for today's show, we're going to be focusing on the primary part of the supporting cast: Marcus Smart, Rui Hachimura, DeAndre Ayton, Jackson Hayes, Luke Kennard, Jake LaRavia, and Jared Vanderbilt. So those seven players are going to be the focus of today's show. And then if we have a little bit of time at the end, maybe we touch on Adu or Bronny. But let's start with Marcus. This was a bounce back year for Marcus. He had played in just 54 games over the past two seasons. This year, he played in 62, ended up starting 54 of them, averaged 9 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal and a half, shot 40% from the floor and 33% from deep. And then in the playoffs, that jumped up to 13 points per game, 3.5 rebounds, 5 assists, but similar percentages, 39% overall and 34% from three. So Trevor, what is your regular season grade for Marcus and what is your playoff grade for Marcus?
Yeah, my regular season grade for Marcus is, I'm going to go with a B+, and that's only because of the lack of games played. Otherwise, it would be an A. They are such a different team with him on the floor, and I'm actually going to echo that with the playoff grade as well. He had his stinker moments at a few times in the playoffs, also had some really big games against the Houston Rockets, but ultimately, I think Marcus Smart is one of those players that transcends what he does statistically because of what he means for the team defensively and the way that his defense is contagious. I think that he's an amplifier out there on the floor. He also acts as a coach on the floor, which is sometimes, I think, an underrated thing. The defensive assignments often get run through him from JJ Redick. He communicates to Marcus Smart, and the Smart is able to be an organizer out there on the defensive side of the ball. So the Lakers gave up 7.3 points per 100 possessions less with Marcus Smart on the floor than off. I think this team needs more players like Marcus Smart and not less. So I'm going to go with a solid B+, with the only thing that I'm really knocking him on here, because he did basically everything that we could hope that he would do this season, is that he only appeared in 62 games, which, as you noted, is a big step up from where he was previously. But still, you're missing, you know, a quarter of the season there, which is a lot. So I'm going to go B+ for Marcus Smart, and I hope they can hang on to him moving forward.
We're pretty much in agreement here. I'm giving him an A- for the regular season and a B+ for the playoffs. So overall, I would lean more toward an A- because I think you got at least non-taxpayer MLE value, if not even closer to like $18, $20 million of value when he was on the floor in a $6 million contract. So for me, I don't weigh the games missed as much, like within reason, right? If I'm more so just judging it based on like what they did when they were on the floor. With Marcus, I thought the fact that he played more games than he had the last couple of years and held up reasonably well, I would say. And the Lakers were pretty cautious with him too. There were several games where they kept him out where he probably could have played if it was like a must-win situation, if it was a playoff game. But they had him in bubble wrap for a lot of the year. So I'm not going to hold that against him, but I totally understand. Like, I think I'm in the minority with not really holding injuries or games missed against guys. But I'm with you. I think he was the closest thing the Lakers had to a true two-way player. The secondary playmaking, the secondary ball handling that he brought to the group. Defensively, I think he was an 80th plus percentile like level defender this year, and really what I think was kind of slept on in the all defense conversation. But from an offensive perspective, being a guy who on any given night could drop double-digit points, could get you 4 or 5 assists. He did have some really big offensive performances for the Lakers. So to me, when we're judging the supporting cast and like LA's need for two-way guys, Marcus is at the top of the list of a guy who clearly was a positive on the defensive side, but also had plenty of games where he was a positive on the offensive side as well. I would agree that sometimes the shot selection, the turnovers, the calling his own number, he can reduce that, but that's just part of the Marcus Smart experience. We've seen him look off Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in like game 7 situations and be like, I got this, guys. I'm gonna shoot this pull up three. Like, it's just part of Marcus Smart. He did the same thing with Luka and LeBron and Austin. In terms of should he stay or should he go, where are you at with him? And if you do think he should stay, what type of contract do you think the Lakers should be trying to sign him to?
Yeah, he's the ultimate, like, the juice is worth the squeeze player, where you know what you're signing up for with the highs and lows of Marcus Smart, but what you're getting out of him is well worth it. And specifically for what this team needs, they need what he provides. When you dig into the advanced metrics, he was an amplifier to the LeBron, Luka, and Austin trio. You add him into the mix, and suddenly they were, top of my head, it was like a plus 15 per 100 possessions, just dominant when you had the four of them on the floor together. So he is absolutely a keep for me. I am earmarking, if they are a below the cap team, assuming they go down that path, kind of earmarking that $9 million room exception for Marcus Smart. But he's a definite keep. Again, I think they need more Marcus Smart mentalities on this team, more Marcus Smart defensive skill sets on this team. You definitely do not want to lose him. I think it's important they hang on to him. And if you can get him using that room exception to do it, you don't want to go with a long-term deal because of the injury history. But if you can do something 2 years, and my goodness, if there could even be team control in the second year, if you could try to work that instead of a player option for a change, that would be great to see. But I do think that $9 million room exception would be a real nice dollar amount for Marcus Smart moving forward here.
I agree, and I feel like I'm also in the minority in terms of Marcus's potential next contract, where I think it's going to be higher than people think. Because if I'm a contender and I have the non-taxpayer MLE, and I could get Marcus for a 2 year deal, or like a 2+1, and maybe it's a team option on the third year, just to sort of like give him on paper the extra year. I would ideally not go full non-taxpayer MLE. This was his age 31 season, going to be age 32 season next year. He does have an extensive injury history, especially these last few years. I would not want to give him that much, but for me, I put down my ideal contract is probably something in like the 2 year, $24 million range. So that's average annual value of 12. I would go up to 2 years, 30 max, and that would be a little bit less than the non-taxpayer MLE. But if you're in a situation where you just need some bench depth or need like a third guard, I think Marcus in that like $12 to $15 million range would make a lot of sense for a ton of teams. So maybe he gives the Lakers a discount because maybe LA prioritizes the center spot and he's the placeholder starter for one more season. And then maybe that second season he transitions into being a full-time bench guy, or even him as like a sixth or seventh man, I think would have a lot of value on this team. So I've been surprised. Like, I saw Yossi, who does a great job with all his cap stuff on his channel, he had Marcus earmarked at like $6 million. And I think yours is the lowest it would go, in my opinion, where maybe, again, he's willing to take a discount, or people are, the market's cool on him. But I think if you're looking at the guys that are out there, I could see some competition for him, at least in the double digits, if not upwards of like $15-ish million.
That's interesting, because my front office show co-host Keith Smith had something similar, where it was probably a month ago that we had the conversation, but I was talking about, you know, could he be a guy that picks up his player option? And in my mind, I'm thinking, oh my God, that would be massive for the Lakers if he picked up the $5.4 million player option that he's got available to him. That would be a huge win for LA. I see him as being worth more than that. If you told me they can get him for $6 million and do a multi-year deal, I would be thrilled for sure if they could do that. And I would be, do not let him out of the room. Give him the pen, the paper, sign the contract immediately. I think that would be an absolute steal for him, because I agree. I think there should be, similar to a guy that we're going to talk about in just a moment, I think there's going to be a number of teams with the full mid level that may have interest in him. The question is, can the Lakers offer him maybe a couple of years, give him a little bit of security there, and then see if they can keep him in the fold after he had, I think, a really successful bounce back here in LA.
Like, by comparison, I think he had a better season than Dorian Finney-Smith did with the Lakers. And we saw that, like, now the contract with DFS has not aged well. And that was it. But there was some injury stuff there that we had an idea of at the time. But barring Marcus having some unforeseen health stuff this summer, like, I think he was clearly a better player than DFS was this past year. And now DFS is maybe a more valuable archetype as a bigger, I think he had phased out of being a 3-and-D wing and was closer to being a small ball big, I guess, at that point. But also like similar ages, DFS maybe less injury concern with him going into that contract. But I don't know. I think Marcus is going to have more of a market than people think. But if the Lakers can get him for the $6 million or the $9 million, I think that's a no-brainer. And I think that's a real win for LA. But I think there's going to be more competition and it ends up going a little bit higher. Let's move on to Rui. What is your regular season grade for Rui and what is your playoff grade for Rui?
Rui is a guy who, you know, we've spent a lot of time over the season talking about, does he fit? When we talk about defensively, can he be a fit there? His rebounding leaves a little something to be desired. But the things that Rui is good at, he is elite at, right? He is very much one of the best players in the league. He's one of only two guys, him and Kevin Durant, who have through for the last 3 years posted better than 50% from the field and better than 40% from three. It's not a fluke. His shooting improvement is real. And you need guys that can do these kinds of things when you've got a player like Luka, like LeBron on the team that are going to open up those kinds of shots. Rui has absolutely feasted as a guy that can make teams pay for paying too much attention when LeBron or Luka or Austin get into the paint. So Rui's a tremendous fit there. We know the Lakers like him a lot. He's got the ability to attack a closeout, pull up for that 15-footer, which is lethal as well. There's other areas of his game that leave you wanting more from him. But in terms of what his job is on this team, I really liked what we saw out of Rui Hachimura this season, especially as the season went on and as we got into the playoffs. So, again, you need more in terms of switchability defensively. You need more help on the glass. Maybe you need a bit more of a high motor player, but I'm starting to lean more towards you can find those in different players without having to replace Rui Hachimura. Keep Rui, add other players that can fill those skill sets there. So for Rui on the regular season, I'm going to go a B+. I thought he was very, very good. Even had that game winner against Toronto. Again, minor concerns about the rebounding, the defense sometimes can get lost off ball, things of that nature. But what you were relying on him to do, he did very, very well. And for the playoffs, my God, talk about a playoff riser. The NBA's all-time three-point percentage leader in the playoffs, which is still a crazy stat to me. Rui Hachimura, I don't have much more to say, but A+. I mean, this guy picks up his game every single year. In the playoffs, you know that he's going to bring his best, and he just knocks down shot after shot after shot for them. So I love what we saw out of Rui in the playoffs, and hopeful that they can wind up staying together here moving forward.
I echo pretty much everything you said. I'm a little lower on the regular season grade than I am. So my regular season grade was a B-, and my playoff grade was an A. And the reason for me with the lower grade was just I think – I'm not going to look at the 2022-23 season because that was a half season, but if you look at 2023-24, 2024-25, and this season, I thought this was clearly his worst defensive season among those three seasons. And now he was much better in the playoffs, and that's where I'm going to get to his playoff grade in a second. But like, I thought he slipped defensively. He had his worst rebounding season of those three seasons. And just like from an effort motor perspective, I thought he regressed a bit, and it just became he was basically a stretch four out there who, if he was not hitting multiple threes, if he was not hitting multiple pull-up jumpers, his overall impact was pretty low because he was not contributing in other ways. And I think we saw that with the stark contrast with him in the starting group versus Marcus in the starting group, and just overall looking at their on-off impacts, and they were sort of in competition with each other as that fourth perimeter guy next to the big three. And I thought Marcus had clearly a bigger impact on both sides of the ball, at least per the data. So for the regular season, I was a little bit like, also just straight up, like the raw scoring, like his usage was pretty much the same as last year, but averaged a couple of points fewer than last year. And I just thought overall, like he kind of regressed in several areas. He was a better 3-point shooter though, and you know, was able to maintain his efficiency and actually improve it as he scaled up in volume a little bit. Then that led us to the playoffs, where I have an A for him. You could argue an A+. I'm good with either one of those grades. So overall, I would give him a B+ on the season. In terms of stay or go, where are you at with Rui? It sounds like you're at a stay, but is there some nuance within that? Or are you just a flat stay with him? And what type of contract would you be looking for?
No, I think there's a lot of merit to what you're saying about the regular season and defensively, because we did have that conversation a lot about, are the Lakers better as a team if you turn Rui Hachimura into a guy like we talked about, you know, Andrew Wiggins, you turn him into a guy who's like a 36, 37% three-point shooter, but can do some of the other things on the glass and switchability defensively and all of that. Would that actually have a bigger positive impact on the team? And I think I spent the majority of the season more in the mindset of, they probably are going to need to move on from Rui if he's going to get paid a lot of money on this next contract. I have since, and maybe it's the playoffs weighing a little too heavily on my mind, but I've started to shift to Rui is good enough at the stuff that he does really well, and those are valuable things with the shooting, that rather than replace Rui with somebody else who can do the high motor, rebounding, switchy defense, those types of things, that if Rui did do those things, he's an extremely high-value player at that point. But rather than replace Rui with somebody who doesn't shoot as well but can do those things, I'm now thinking more along the lines of surround Rui with guys who can do those things and keep him on board. Now, that's going to lead to, and we're going to get to in just a bit, some other difficult decisions, because you can't have everybody on your team needing to have other players around them pick up the motor side of things, pick up the hustle plays and everything else. But I do think that Rui is a guy that has really grown as a Laker. His improvement has been noticeable. It's been dramatic, at least on the offensive end. You're right that the rebounding did slip a bit, and defensively you've got concerns there. But I'm more of the mindset of hang on to him on a reasonable deal here moving forward. And I continue to refer to the Naz Reid situation in Minnesota a few years back, where Minnesota knew that there were going to be multiple offers out there at the full mid-level exception for Naz Reid. Teams are going to be happy to give that. I think that's the situation Rui is going to be walking into. If I'm San Antonio, I'd be thrilled to give Rui Hachimura the mid-level exception this summer. So if I'm the Lakers, he is extension eligible all the way through June 30th. I'm going to Rui and I'm saying, hey, we're going to give you, everybody else is going to offer you $15 million. We're going to give you a few million more than that. And in exchange for us giving you a bit more, what we're going to ask is that you don't even touch free agency. Don't even look at anybody else. We're going to lock you up on an extension before then, which is, again, exactly how the Wolves approached the Naz Reid situation a few years back. So that's what I'd like to see. Something in the 3-year range. I think I came out at 3 years, like 55-ish million or so for Rui Hachimura on a deal that would start around 17 or 18 million, somewhere in that range for Rui. I do think he is a keeper, while recognizing that you're going to have to be very intentional with some of your other roster spots in order to make up for some of his deficiencies.
We're pretty much in agreement with this one as well. So I'm leaning stay, and I've gone back and forth. I've waffled on it. I also think there's an opportunity cost element here, right? Where it just depends what the alternatives are. And after seeing like Lu Dort, for example, right, on paper, would fit a lot of what the Lakers need, but there's such a significant shooting drop-off going from Rui to Lu Dort. And I mentioned Lu Dort because that's a guy that I think is going to be in a similar price point to Rui, whether he's still on that team option or he opts out. And while Lu Dort is a much better defender than Rui and a much better motor player and does, I think, more of the little things than Rui does, Rui's such a better shooter that I almost lean on the side of like just straight up, who would you rather have between those two? I kind of lean Rui, but it, you can make a case. I think it's close. So I'm at the point where I'm a little bit lower on the contract. Like I would say for me, 3 years, $48 to $52 million. So that's like 16, 17 million average annual value would be my goal. So it is a haircut on his current contract. Assuming there's no other better alternative, that's more of a two-way option. The other factor for me is just what happens with LeBron. I think if you are retaining Rui, I still would like to be adding to the perimeter group in terms of two-way talent. I just feel like you mentioned guys needing to be protected by like motor and defense. You already have Luka, Austin, and assuming Austin's retained, and LeBron, assuming he's retained, your three best players need guys who are defenders and motor guys. If you add in Rui as like a top seven guy in your rotation, now you're saying like over half of your top seven players are guys who need to be protected defensively and with motor. So if you don't have like three all defense or three top 15, 20th percentile defenders at the other three rotation spots, you're basically setting yourself up for a repeat where you're going to be an average-ish to below average defense. So that's where it's a delicate balance here, because I don't think you should lose Rui for nothing. And I think he has a lot of value, and he's such an elite shooter. At the same time, when you look at specifically how he complements the weaknesses of the Lakers' best players, I think he actually, he puts kerosene on the weaknesses of, like, he's definitely addresses the shooting need, which you want around Luka, you want around Austin, you want around LeBron. But is he going to be doing the dirty work? Is he going to be rebounding at a high level? Is he going to be diving on the ground for loose balls consistently? Is he going to be locking down the top perimeter guy on the other team? Like, no. So that's where I'm like, he's such a good player. He's such an important part of what the Lakers are doing. I just think that there is this limitation to having Rui plus the big three as like four of your top six or seven guys.
You have to, if you're replacing him, you need to get somebody who is very, very good at being a two-way player. You can't just get a guy who is an okay two-way player to replace Rui Hachimura and just say, well, the skill set is going to be enough. Like, for, you know, I referenced him before, but the Andrew Wiggins conversation that we had so often. If you told me you're going to pay Rui Hachimura, let's call it $18 million, $16 million, $17 whatever it is, or Andrew Wiggins $30 million, I mean, give me Rui Hachimura all day, even if Wiggins is a better fit. That said, if you told me that you're turning, this is not realistic, but just the first really good two-way wing to pop into my head was Jaden McDaniels. If you told me we could turn Rui Hachimura into a Jaden McDaniels, if you told me some Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, obviously these guys are a tier above, multiple tiers above Rui, but if you could turn him into a really good two-way player, that's where you start to question. Like, I guess maybe a more realistic would be like, if you could have Rui Hachimura or you could have Derek Jones Jr., right? If you could have one of those two guys, then what are you doing in that situation? Because you're right, there is a fit concern with Rui, where defensively, do you need guys that are going to be more supportive of your stars? And I've gone back and forth on this a lot too, because you mentioned it. Are you more likely to retain Rui if LeBron leaves, or are you more likely to retain him if he stays? Because is Rui the guy that you want to slot in as your starting four, assuming Austin and Luka are still in that starting lineup, or are you more likely to try to take the extra flexibility and really lean into everybody else on the team must be a certain level of motor, defensive ability, and so on?
I think he's more likely to stay if LeBron leaves, and you don't even have to necessarily make him the starter, because if you're paying him $17, $18 million, that can be a top bench player. But sure, theoretically, if LeBron is gone, you are probably slotting in Rui, and then it depends how you're filling out the rest of the front court. It's a good question. I mean, you could go back to last season, and the Lakers did have success with the non-LeBron starting group to start the season with Rui in there. And if you can find the right five and the right three, maybe it does fit with those three. But I also think we saw to some degree with this group, and we're about to get into it with the next player, there is a difference between regular season success and playoff success. And what works in the regular season does not always translate to the postseason. So something could look great on paper. Someone could be putting up a certain amount of numbers. A lineup could be working against 85% of the NBA. But once you get into a first round series or a second round series and you're playing a team just as good, if not better than you, you start to see some of those things go away. And that there is, I think, a clear difference between 16 game players and 82 game players. And ideally your supporting cast is both, but I feel like the Lakers had more 82 game players than 16 game players. And my ideal version of next year's roster is Marcus and Rui are the sixth and seventh men. We'll see if that's possible, right? Like, I think there's a decent chance at least one of them probably has to start. Speaking of starting, let's move on to DeAndre Ayton. What is your regular season grade for DA, and what is your playoff grade?
DA is tough. He's a guy who he had some really great games, really started the season strong, but the highs were high, the lows were low with DeAndre Ayton. For the regular season, because he had such a down period where you needed high energy from him, where there were games where other guys were missing and you needed him to step up, and he just didn't. I think I'm going to go with a C for the regular season. I still think he's fine value on his contract, but I think just in general, my whole vibe on DeAndre Ayton is he's okay. He's okay. You know, you feel like, all right, we've got an okay big man if he's your starter there in the paint. And for the playoffs, you know, there were moments in the postseason where you really needed him to step up and have a big game, and he just was not able to do that. He did have some good games in the series against the Rockets, especially as the Rockets went away from crashing the offensive glass so much. Then DA was able to dominate a bit more on the boards, and he did well there. But again, I'm lukewarm at best on DeAndre Ayton. Here's where I've landed. So if I had to give a grade for the playoffs, I guess I would go C+, because he was able to pick it up late in that first round series against the Houston Rockets. But where I'm ultimately at with DeAndre Ayton is that he's a guy where whatever he does on his contract, I think we could spin it in a positive way, where because it's only an $8.1 million player option, if he picks that up, okay, he picks it up, fine value. You still try to go find somebody else to probably be your starter if you can, and that may be difficult, but I don't think he's overpaid at $8.1 million. But if he were to decline that, I don't think I'm interested in giving him a raise off of that. I'd rather say, okay, well, if he decides to decline it, we'll take the additional flexibility and go try to find a big somewhere else and then use that moving there. So I think they're kind of in a nice spot with him because of where that number is at. It's just about right that you could push it in a positive direction regardless of what he does here moving forward. But again, his season so up and down, he was okay as a big for the Lakers. He was a fine stopgap, not the long-term solution. And so again, I ultimately finished right in that kind of C plus range for DA.
I never thought I'd be the one more optimistic and higher on DeAndre Ayton on this show.
I'm DeAndre Ayton, I guess.
But here we are. I give him a B minus for the regular season, and then I'll give him a C plus for the playoffs. So overall, I'll give him a B minus, and that is weighted to some degree by the contract, where I think he lived up to the contract. I think he's probably, to me, he's in a really good backup center, right? I think he's, you could argue, a $10 to $15 million backup center, and he plays 18 to 22 minutes for some team that needs his skill set off of the bench. And if your starter goes down, he can step in and be the placeholder starter for a portion of the season. But sure, we were just talking about the 16 game stuff and the 82 game stuff. Like, he was a clear to me. I tracked this all season, and we talked about it a ton on Lakers Collective. Like, a lot of his worst games came against the best teams in the league. And it was the low lows of 0 points, 4 rebounds, or 4 points, 6 rebounds. And it was like just basically unplayable out there and not having an impact on either side of the floor. The Lakers are also a bottom three rim protection team this season. So even with him averaging a block per game and having some nice defensive moments, some nice defensive performances, he cannot be the anchor of a good half court defense. That's just not part of his makeup. It was an upgrade over Jackson to a degree, I would say. And he did what the Lakers ultimately needed him to do. But we saw a clear ceiling there of he was not playable against OKC in the regular season. He was not playable against OKC in the playoffs. And the Lakers are going to have this OKC roadblock for the next 3 to 5 years. And to get through them, you cannot have DeAndre Ayton be your starting center. So one of the things we talked about going into that series was we were like, this is going to show us who fits, who doesn't, who can play against OKC, who can't. I think the verdict was clear. DeAndre Ayton cannot play against OKC. Maybe he could be a 12 to 15 minute a night backup in that series. But based on the Lakers' priorities, based on the contract stuff that they're going to be dealing with, like, DeAndre could opt in and maybe shift him to that backup role, but I think he views himself, to go back to the Clint Capella stuff, like, he views himself as a starter still. And so if you're the Lakers, my priority would be getting off of him, whether that is him opting out and just leaving or him opting in and then immediately trying to trade him. Yep. So in terms of stay or go for DA, I think it's clear for me, it's a go. I do not want him on next year's roster if I'm the Lakers. If he is willing to buy into a very specific backup role, and maybe the Lakers sign Robert Williams or they sign Mitchell Robinson, and they're like, we're going to go center by committee, one of those two plus DA plus Jackson. And it's just very matchup based, very performance based. Okay, like I would be open to that, but I don't see DA going for a backup role or going for a role where maybe some nights he's not even going to play. And for that reason, I'm just out on him, and I would rather the Lakers move on.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement with you. Everything you said right there. DA is, I've come to think of him as center version of Dennis Schroeder. You feel great if he's your backup.
It's a good one.
If he's your starter, you don't feel so great, right? You're like, he leaves you wanting more as a center. Now, and then when we talk about in terms of his overall fit with the team, right, we've been talking about the need for high motor players, the need for players that are going to be crashing to the floor, making all the hustle plays. Obviously, he's not that. He's not the same level of lob threat as even, say, Jackson Hayes is, which he's got his pros and cons compared to Hayes for sure. But fit with the team isn't really great for what the team needs. If you told me he's a backup center, you feel pretty good about that. But frankly, given the context of this team, is an $8.1 million backup center a luxury that this team has? Probably not. They're going to have to focus their resources elsewhere. So that's where, if he opts out, I feel fine with it. If he opts in, you could use him in a trade as an expiring contract. I do think he is insurance in the event that you do sign a Mitch Robinson or Robert Williams, guys who have had injury issues. You could keep DA in the fold and, like you said, do that three-headed monster thing, which frankly may be the most attainable option for the Lakers with an upgrade at the center position, because getting like a Walker Kessler or someone like that seems so far-fetched in this moment. But I like the idea.
It's not the scariest three-headed monster, by the way.
It's the three-headed
monster is kind of generous.
It's a three-headed monster from like the Monsters, Inc. universe, where like maybe they look scary in the right light, but they're not really all that scary. In fact, most of the time, they just make you laugh. Unfortunately, that would probably be where this would go. But I think you could use him as a trade chip in a way that would be almost similar to like Montrezl Harrell, right? When he picked up his team option with the Lakers, and we all knew he didn't seem super happy being a Laker. He's probably going to be moved. And then lo and behold, he was indeed put into a trade. I could see something happening like that as well with DA. So he is one of the guys that if we're looking at, you're going to keep Marcus, you're going to keep Rui, everybody else has to be in that specific skill set. If the Lakers are going to go down that path, DeAndre Ayton becomes one of the casualties of that type of a build. So I'm in agreement. I think he would be a go in this scenario.
What about Luke Kennard? What was your regular season grade for him? What was your playoff grade, and where are you at with him?
Yeah, so Luke Kennard, I think, comes down to a couple of things here. Well, you traded Gabe Vincent and a second round pick to get him at the time. Even I questioned, is it worth the second round pick to get a guy who may not be long for the team? Did he really move the needle all that much? I thought his offensive fit was better than I expected. His ability to attack a closeout, get into the paint, pass the ball, make the right read. And J.J. Redick talked about it in his postseason presser, finding guys who can dribble, pass, and shoot. Luke Kennard was, we knew he could shoot, but the dribbling, the passing was better than I think I expected when he came to the Lakers. So for the regular season, I'll give him a B+ because he still leaves you wanting a bit more in terms of his defensive ability. We certainly saw that become a problem in the playoffs where it was difficult to have him on the floor, because ultimately he doesn't fit that skill set that you're looking for of a guy who's going to be everywhere all at once, flying all over the court. He does provide the shooting, can dribble, pass, shoot, but the other areas of his game are particularly weak. But Kennard wound up being, I think, a really nice addition on the offensive side of the ball. Give him a B+. For the playoffs, I'm going to give him an A, and that's solely because of this. Not because he showed he could play against OKC. No. Giving him an A because I don't think you survive round one without him. He was that good in game one and game two against the Houston Rockets that you can look at that and say, if that was still Gabe Vincent, the Lakers lose those games and then you don't wind up advancing. So I'm going to give him an A for the playoffs simply because I don't think they advance without having him in round one. After that, things dropped off pretty dramatically, but I'm going to give him the benefit of he was a significant help getting you to that next round. And I'll give him the grade based off of that. Ultimately, stay or go. To me, he's a go. He's another casualty. As much as he fits offensively, if you are trying to be laser focused on building a team around Luka Doncic, and if we're in a world where Rui returns, I don't think you can bring back Luke Kennard. Of course, depending on the number, if it was some ridiculously low number, that changes things. But assuming that he's going to get anywhere near what he was getting now, which is $11 million, I think the opportunity cost is just going to be too great with bringing him back.
I would give him a B plus for the regular season. So we agree there. My original playoff grade was a B, but you're talking me into moving that up to a B plus. The reason I say B, is just because if you actually look at his per possession and per 36 minute numbers, he averaged fewer points, fewer rebounds, and fewer assists in the playoffs. His 2-point percentage dropped by 10%. The 3-point percentage did go up by a little bit, but I think an actual overall play, it's a big aside here, but putting aside game one and game two, I actually think like that stretch from game three through game four of the OKC series, he was worse than his average, like an average couple of weeks in the regular season, or even how he closed the season with the triple double with some big assist performances down the stretch. It felt like Houston figured out how to just take him out entirely. And he had a couple moments in the OKC series, but for the most part, they took him out as well. And he still has utility and still has value as one of the best shooters in the league, one of the best gravity guys in the league. There was several of those gravity metric graphics that came out of he was top five in gravity at various points of the playoffs. So he still had a ton of value in that sense, but I didn't expect him to average 25 points a game and shoot 72% on threes like he did through the first couple of games. But the drop, it just dropped off to such an extent where the bad habits of passing up open looks, not being aggressive enough, and being picked on relentlessly defensively all reared up to the point where I just felt like it was pretty disappointing after that. Now, to your point, the Lakers don't win that series without him. So, as I knock stuff over, we could bump that up for maybe I'll bump it up to a B plus and give him a B plus overall. But to your point, I'm with you on Go. I think you cannot, to me, you cannot keep him and Rui. I think there's only room for one of those guys of the shooting archetype that is relatively limited defensively. The difference is Rui's 6'8" and Rui has shown an ability to be an average-ish to even positive defender in certain matchups, certain roles. Whereas Luke is, to me, a bottom 15 to 20th percentile defender in the league, and that might even be a little bit generous. And we also have seen teams can scheme him out of a series and just completely neutralize him. So I'm on the side of Go. If Rui is not retained and the Lakers go a different route with prioritizing more of a two-way wing there, I would be open to Luke somewhere in the $7 to $9 million range. And that would be specifically that room exception. I wouldn't mind using that on him. If maybe you're using some cap space on Marcus, you use the room exception on Luke. If they use the room exception on Marcus, then I'm out on him unless it's a vet minimum. If it's a vet minimum, it's a no brainer, but I think he's going to have more of a market than that. What about Jackson Hayes? Where are you at with Jackson, his regular season grade and playoff grade?
I thought Jackson, he's got a mind meld with Luka when it comes to the lob chemistry that they've got. He's not a great rim protector. We talked about it with DeAndre Ayton that the Lakers, they rank 29th in the NBA in opponents' field goal percentage at the rim. That's not entirely on the bigs, of course, but he's not a guy that's really going to deter shots at the bucket. What Jackson Hayes does, he does very well, though. He's a very mobile big. He can get out and cover multiple positions on the perimeter, at least for a moment. I think he's cut down on a lot of the kind of the dumb fouls that we would see out of Jackson. It felt like he would step into a game in years past and just immediately pick up an offensive foul on a screen. You could set your watch by it. Those, while they still popped up now and then, were largely cut down. I did think the added weight that he put on over the summer was a benefit as well. I felt, is he the best backup big in the NBA? No, but you don't feel bad having him as your backup either. So I thought it was a solid B season for Jackson Hayes, and specifically in the context, if this were not a team with Luka Doncic on it as a guy who's going to be throwing those lobs, very different talk with Jackson Hayes. But based on the offensive rhythm that he's got with Luka, the high motor that he brings, I think it was a solid B season. I did think there was a little bit too much high and low from Jackson Hayes during the playoffs. There were too many moments where we saw Alperen Şengün was able to bully him. OKC's bigs gave him some problems. He also had some highlight performances as well, but not quite enough consistency there. Some of that, though, again, can be attributed to Luka. He's very dependent upon Luka being on the floor with him to throw those lobs for him to get up and throw those things down. So playoffs, I think I go more B-. I thought that he struggled a bit there. I feel pretty good about Jackson Hayes as being one of the team's backup bigs moving forward. So if we had to say stay or go, especially given that his cap hold is just $4.5 million, I think if they do pursue a route where they're below the cap team, that will be a help for them. So I would say stay for Jackson Hayes, especially since he's going to be playing with Luka in Slovenia and doing all those sorts of things too. I think you keep them together. Again, is he moving the needle a ton? No, but you could do worse than Jackson Hayes as a backup big. And overall, I thought that the season in its entirety was a nice step forward for him.
We continue to agree here. My regular season grade was a B. My playoff grade was a B minus. I am at stay for the right price. For me, I would not want to pay him more. Like, I think a 2-year, $10 to $12 million deal, so that's $5 to $6 million average annual value, I would not want to go above that. I just think, like, you could justify maybe $7-8 million, but I think that's a little bit too rich for my blood, especially because to me, he's more of a three-headed, I'm not going to say monster, but three-headed creature approach with the center spot, because I think we have seen, and if we just project this out into like the centers that the Lakers are going to need him to potentially match up with as a backup, it is like the Jokic's, the Gobert's, the Şengün's, the Wemby's, the Chet and Hartenstein front lines. Like, those are going to be the front lines for at least the next 2-3 years. And I don't think he matches up well in any of those matchups. We saw him played off the floor against Minnesota. We saw him played off the floor, you know, out of the series at times against Houston. He had a really rough series against OKC up until game 4, when he had his best game in his playoff career. But that to me is like Jackson, I think, showed some things in the playoffs where there was real progress compared to last season. And he went from being completely unplayable to being situationally playable. I understand the mind meld, as you've said, with Luka, the relationship with Luka. He's now part of the Slovenian national team. I expect Jackson to be back, but I think there needs to be a contingency plan here of he is not a matchup proof backup option. And if you are not heavily investing in the center spot with the starter, and you are going a little bit more, okay, we're going to take a discount guy here or spend our money on the wing, okay, then I think you need a third playable center that's better than Maxi Kleba, and you just need to find another value there, which I think there are some guys that could be that value, but I would not commit to Jackson being like a 15 to 18 minute a night backup center every single night. I think that would be a mistake.
Yeah, you talked about 82 game guy or 16 game guy. He's an 82 game player in the right matchup. He could be. Yeah, he's a guy that can help get you there. He's not a guy that's going to get you over the top once you get there, but he can certainly help get you there. You get the right matchup on a random Wednesday in January, Jackson Hayes may have 15 points and 8 rebounds and be flying all over the floor. And because he's on a heater, you know, JJ feeds him 23, 24 minutes or something like that. He's that type of guy. I think we talk about skill set fit, like where DA doesn't really fit skill set wise with what you need. Jackson Hayes does. He's just not quite high enough level. Like, in an ideal world, Jackson Hayes is like JaVale McGee, right? Where he's just that next level player that would be an even better fit. And then you're more closer to penciling him in as a starter. And is this guy night in, night out guy, that type of thing. But I think he fits very nicely with this team. And so no problem with him being one of your reserves. And when you talk about the reserves, you do need, I think, some skill set differentiation between those guys as well. If you're going to bring in, if he's going to be one of three bigs, your other two, at least one of the other two, should be a different skill set than the kind of bouncy lob threat type guy. I think you still need that bruiser that you can get in there that can provide some size, some physicality, and all of that. But Jackson, really solid season and no issues bringing him back as long as it's, you know, at the right price.
What about Jake LaRavia? What's your grades for him? Or what are your grades?
I think it really depends with Jake. Are we talking about like the last 3 months, or are we talking about the first part of the season?
Regular season and playoffs. You
know, right. I mean, if you go based on just what we've seen over the last few months, it's, oh my God, this guy's, he's a deer in headlights. You can't have him on the floor. He's going to airball every three that he takes. He's going to make mistakes out there. You know, availability is an ability. He was the only Laker to play in all 82 games and would have played in all playoff games had he not gotten benched, and rightfully so, gotten benched in that series against OKC. So here's where I'm at with Jake. The three-point shooting was certainly disappointing the way it fell off. He did have, I believe the month of December was much better for him shooting the three. There were points where he got put in the starting lineup. He thought, man, maybe this guy just sticks in the starting five. My hope is that the shooting does come around this summer, that he can develop more consistency there. I think I can really only give him a C on the regular season because he was a high-energy guy. I think fit-wise, he's the type of player that you want to take risks on in terms of being a switchy wing that can help you a bit on the boards, that is going to hustle, is going to be high motor. You know, he's going to do all the other things that you need on a team with Luka, with LeBron, with Austin Reeves. If you're going to take a chance on somebody, he's the type of guy. But unfortunately, the three-point shooting fell off the way that it did. I thought the confidence started to wane as well. And some of the mistakes of not, I think, not being ready for those big moments really reared their ugly head. That said, he is young. He's younger than Dalton Kanek, for example, on this roster. So I'm still intrigued by what he can be moving forward. If the right trade came along, we're talking stay or go. By the way, he's an F for the playoffs. I thought they were not quick enough to pull the trigger and get him out of the rotation during the playoffs. He was not ready for the moment. The lights were too bright for him. C for the regular season, simply because I'm putting more weight on what we saw early from him, and then into the winter, once we started coming out of, you know, post All-Star break, things started to fall apart for him. But if I had to say stay or go, if you told me the right trade came along where Jake LaRavia's salary was useful in it, okay. But am I just exiling him to get him off the roster? Am I surrendering an asset to get it to move his contract? No, because stylistically, he's the type of player that I think can really fit with this Lakers team if he can get in the lab this summer and find that consistency with the three-point shooting.
I'm a little bit higher on him, but barely. So my regular season grade is a B minus. I think now, to your point, it's probably more like first half of the season, I would have given him a B. Second half of the season, I would give him a D plus. So that to me, I mean, maybe B minus is, maybe it's more of a C plus, like B minus C plus range for him in the regular season. I think the big things for me were just the availability. And I, on a team that only two guys played more than 70 games, like I think the 82 games there, while I'm not going to ding guys for missing games, I am going to reward guys for being available. Like I think that I view it as more of like a something that's an additive or like a positive rather than a negative. So I don't really want to hold. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of the rotation did miss 15 plus games. I'm not going to hold that against guys necessarily, but if you are available, I am going to give you some credit for that. So he played in all 82 games. And to me, even with his struggles on the offensive end, he probably was the closest thing to a two-way role player that they had behind Marcus. He mm-hmm. had four games, 20 plus points, multiple games with multiple threes. Like but the problem was, if you look at the dates on all those games, because I you know, in preparation for this, went through his game log, and all of his basically, I think every 15 plus point performance he had was before February 2nd, except for like two games. He had this concentration of all these double digit scoring games through the first 3 months of the season, and then starting in February or you know, late January, he just fell off offensively and was, to your point, playing deer in the headlights basketball and just was not the same player. And outside of, he only had one good shooting month in terms of being an above average 3-point shooter. Every other month he was low 30s or below, and several months in the 20s. So it's like, I think there is something to, he fit a need with the group. He was only making $6 million, which is barely above a vet minimum. He's still young and developing. I think he did show a lot of growth in that first half of the season, but he was not able to sustain it. Playoffs, I'm with you. I mean, I gave him a D minus, but you could say F. I thought he had some nice defensive stretches in the Houston series against Şengün, you know, guarding him in the post, or just being like, they needed some bodies and some guys who could defend and rebound. And I thought he gave them a bit of a boost there, but he shot even worse in the playoffs than he did in the regular season. So overall, I'd give him a C for the season. In terms of stay or go, he's not a free agent, so the Lakers would have to trade dump him to get off of him, but he does have 1 year left. I'm on the side of stay, just because I think there is some untapped potential there if he can get better as a shooter, become more confident as an offensive player. However, if the Lakers, like if there is a scenario in which a team really likes Jake or it's just matching salary in a trade, I'm open to them trade dumping him. So I think we're in agreement there. What about Vando? What's your regular season and playoff grade for him?
Jared Vanderbilt's tough. I like Jared Vanderbilt is one of those guys that's hard not to like because he hustles so, he plays so hard. Every minute that he's out there on the court, he's flying all over the place. And yet very clearly he was in JJ Redick's doghouse for much of the season. You didn't get when the opportunity presented itself to not play him, JJ would not play him. He was the odd man out more often than not. The 3-point shooting concerns, despite all the work that he put in over the summer, those were still real, even if the percentages did improve. He still wasn't enough of a threat out there to keep defenses honest. The lack of lift at the rim, the lack of explosiveness, he was regularly getting his shot blocked at the bucket when he was trying to go up and finish, to where the point where it really, the only way that you were going to get a solid finish from Jared Vanderbilt is if he had just a straight line to the basket and he could just go up and dunk it and nobody between him and the rim. If there was any rim protection there at all, that shot was getting sent back. Certainly plays hard defensively, flies all over the court. He's a guy who can guard multiple positions. I do think the injuries took their toll a little bit athletically. He was a little bit less of an agent of chaos out there on the floor, just forcing teams into turnovers and all of that. Again, he plays very hard, does well rebounding the basketball. It's hard to grade him because how much of it is he didn't get an opportunity to go do the things that he would typically do versus he just wasn't as good at those things. I think ultimately I just have to give him a C on the regular season and probably come in about the same for the playoffs. And that's understanding that if he were to go somewhere else, maybe he gets a different opportunity and he looks better. But I think the offensive drawbacks are very significant on this team. And so I've got concerns moving forward. If we go to stay or go, I'm a strong go, both for the Lakers and for the sake of Jared Vanderbilt. I think he could probably use to be. I think JJ has shown his cards in terms of what he thinks of Jared Vanderbilt on this team and the way he fits. And I think the best situation for the Lakers moving forward is not going to be with Vando. And for Vando himself, is probably to be somewhere else. The challenge is he's owed, what is it, $25, $26 million over the next 2 years. That's a difficult contract to move off of. We could even talk about, is it worth, you know, waiving and stretching him, or what could that ultimately look like there? But unfortunately, Vanderbilt is being paid an amount of money that simply doesn't really reflect what his ultimate value is to this team. He's overpaid based on what this team is using him for. He's the kind of guy that can get the fans behind him in a big, big way because he makes the hustle plays, he crashes to the floor, does all these things. But unfortunately, the deficiencies in his game have just never been truly fixed to the degree that they need them to. So that's where I'm at on Vando. I think it's a go if they can. I don't know if they can move on from him, though. I think it's going to be, he's a negative value and it would cost them something to move his contract.
I'm a little bit lower on him as well. I'm C minus for both the regular season and the playoffs. I think I was with you in that more of a C performance, but I can't overlook the contract here. Like, I think if we're going to factor that in for guys like Marcus and DA and Jake, we're also going to have to factor that in negatively for a guy like Vando. In retrospect, it was a giant mistake that they signed him to that contract extension. I think based on how the next season went, he would have been probably a minimum guy or at most a taxpayer MLE guy in that like $5 to $6 million range, just above the minimum. So they are paying him almost four times, or, you know, depending on his number due to his years of service, like 3 to 4 times what a minimum contract is. And this has been a clear negative contract for over a year now that they could not dump last offseason, they could not dump at the trade deadline, and they could not dump, or we'll see if they're able to dump this summer. Despite all this talk about his jumper improving and how much work he put in, he actually shot worse on corner threes than he had in 4 seasons. He shot 30% on corner threes. He shot 38% last year, 32% the year before, and 35% the year before. So he's actually regressed as a corner 3-point shooter. Now, maybe ramping up the volume because he did take more. I don't have the exact number of attempts in front of me, but maybe there was like him playing a little bit more in totality between games and just overall minutes led to a larger sample size, which led to him regressing as a shooter. But that to me is concerning. And like, you just, I mean, he's functionally a center on offense who you're trying to play as a perimeter defender. And that just means you have to have certain players. If you're going to be playing him as a five on offense and as a 2-4 on defense, you now need perimeter guys who can protect the rim and rebound at a certain level and be like those backline guys, which the Lakers don't really have. He's a for sure go. They need to trade dump him. Now, here's my question for you. Would you attach a future first round pick or even, let's say, in the best case scenario, like a lottery protected first round pick? But would you attach a serious asset to get off of him? Would you wave and stretch him? Or if you can't add him into a trade, or you're throwing in Dalton or a due or a second as like the sweetener, if that's not enough, are you just keeping him at that point?
Yeah, I mean, I do think the cop-out answer is, well, it depends on what it is that they're doing with that. You know, if you were to attach a first to him so you could dump him, what are you doing with that flexibility? Is that flexibility going to be used? Hey, we're going to do this. We're going to dump Vando so that we have the room to give Luke Kennard $20 million. Well, no, then of course not doing that. But if that's your path in order to go get somebody, okay, was it ideal to attach a second? I think it was multiple seconds. Well, one came from Dallas to trade Jalen Huchefino to the Utah Jazz. Was that ideal to dump that salary? No, but it led to you getting Luka, right? So if that is worth it, whatever is going to come from it, okay, you have to be open to it. And that would include waiving and stretching his salary, which would be just over $5 million per year for the next 5 years if you waive and stretch him. So that's a lot of dead money on your books, but also when we look at the increasing salary cap, you know, the salary cap's at $165 million this coming season. So we're talking about, you know, what, 2-3% of the cap right now, and that cap's only going to go up even more. So that's where you start running into, like, is that a palatable option? But again, it comes down to what are you getting out of it? Generally, I don't like the idea of attaching a serious asset to a player just to erase a mistake. I think that's part of the reason why the Lakers are asset poor, is because they've had to attach assets to players to erase past mistakes. Kendrick Nunn, it was a good move in a vacuum to turn Kendrick Nunn into Rui Hachimura, no question. But it would cost you 3 second-round picks to erase a mistake and turn him into a better player. Same thing with Gabe Vincent, right? You had to give up a second-round pick when you only had one to erase a mistake and turn him into a better player. I think the Lakers have done that too much already. They're not asset rich enough to continue to do that. So in general, I'm not in favor of it. But if you told me that opens up the pathway to, hey, we're going to attach a first and Jared Vanderbilt is going to turn into Peyton Watson or something. Well, okay. Of course, that's something that you're going to have to be open to. But if it's just clear them off the books and we'll see what we can figure out to do with the money, I don't think they should be that desperate as to attach one of their very few first round picks available to Vando just to clear the money.
I think that's where I'm at. First and foremost, you have to explore the trade market and just see what you can get with those picks, and just thinking more about adding to the roster separate from Vando or getting off additional money. Then I think there's the question of if you can get off Vando plus Dalton, Vando plus whoever, what can you do with that additional cap flexibility, right? Because depending on the projection, I have the Lakers projected around 49-ish million with their cap holds and with getting off Nick Smith Jr. And with the number 25 pick, all that stuff. Let's just say roughly 49 million. Well, if you get off Vando plus Dalton, that can bump that up to 65 million. And now with 65 million, can you potentially retain LeBron, Rui, and Marcus and then add another player into that? Can you retain LeBron plus one of those guys and then still have a bunch of money to split between either a bigger name or a couple of guys? And just what are the avenues that are open based on you making that trade? If it is just we're running it back, but we want to get off the Vando money, or we're just trying to get off the money and it's not really leading to anything, I'm with you that I think at that point you just keep the first round pick, eat the money, and maybe next summer you can get off that Vando contract. But I think at that point I would be looking to get, like, I think they should get off, we're not going to really touch on Dalton, but they should be looking to get off some of the back end money here, or whether it's Dalton or waiving Nick Smith Jr. or if DA opts in, I think trying to get off his contract. Like, I think there needs to be a version of this, of clearing some of the lower salary on this cap sheet that just does not fit. And then before we close here, any quick thoughts on Bronny Adu, Maxi Dalton, Nick Smith Jr., just either impressions from the regular season or how you view any of those guys moving forward.
Maxi, I like him. Obviously, he is the screen setter, right? Who's he put on that final play? I like him as kind of an end of bench, right? End of the bench veteran guy, I suppose. But I don't know if he's in the league or not next year. So thank you for your service. Most of these guys, I thought Bronny's shown real growth. When you compare Bronny right now compared to where he was a year and a half ago, 2 years ago when he first came into the NBA, whoo. Big time difference, right? In terms of what he can do. Doesn't necessarily mean he's a rotation player yet, but I want to give him credit for how far he has come as a player. He has shown real growth. He has put in significant work. You can see that. I do think that Adu Thiro getting a full off season of training, getting that he did not get last summer, didn't get a training camp, didn't get summer league, didn't get preseason, none of that. If he can be healthy, he's the guy who could really take a big step next year. And I don't know what that would mean for him in terms of the rotation just yet, but obviously the athleticism is pretty eye-popping. Of the guys that are that you just mentioned there, he's the guy that could show the most growth between now and the start of next season and maybe be knocking on the door of being a rotation player for next season if he's able to continue on a very high trajectory because of that athleticism that he's already possessing. So I'm really excited to see what Adu can do. I think he's going to be a blast in summer league. Fingers crossed, hopefully he's available to play for that because he is a summer league player to a T. Like his ability to get out there and run and just jump over people, he's going to be a lot of fun there. Those are my only, in general, you've got to improve the end of the bench guys. But in terms of all those guys that we're talking about, who are the players most to keep an eye on in terms of sticking with the team and then maybe being something next year? It would be Adu Thiro, clearly number one by a long shot. And then Bronny, just can he continue his growth and maybe at some point be like a 10th, 11th guy on a roster, something like that. That's what you're looking for with him.
I think summer league will be big for both of those guys. I'm with you. I think yep. Maxi Kleba probably out of the league, but maybe he's a vet minimum. Maybe he goes back to Dallas, like, you know, a bit vet sure. minimum guy somewhere. Dalton and Nick Smith, I think they should move off of both those guys. And then Adu is a keeper. The interesting thing with Adu is like, where are you at with if a team, let's say it's the Vando situation of mm-hmm. you can get off of Vando's contract, but it's not going to cost you a first. It's going to cost you a do. Where are you at in that hypothetical? Because I think I'm a little bit more open to trading him than some. I see the downside, but I also think the Lakers are, in my opinion, in more of a win now situation than some realize. And I think they kind of have a 2 to 3 year window here to try to maximize at least like this current iteration of the roster. And Luka's 27 now. Luka's entering his prime or in his prime now. Like, I don't think we should be thinking about what the 2032 Lakers are going to look like. It needs to be, how do you build the best roster going to next season? How do you keep the core of that roster over the next like 1 to 3 years? Adu can fit into that, especially if he has a fully healthy offseason and shows some growth. At the same time, if he's the guy that potentially allows you to get off of Vando's contract, I think that's an interesting what if.
Again, it depends on what you're doing with that flexibility, but Adu is a tough one. I think fans are higher on him because what he does well is very loud. Mm-hmm. When he makes that, throws down a dunk and you just go, oh damn, we didn't see anybody do that aside from maybe LeBron on the nights where he was really feeling good. We didn't see anybody who could do what Adu Thiro just did athletically, right? Getting up with his head at the rim and throwing down these dunks. And the things that he does poorly, missing rotations off ball, not quite knowing where to be, those things are a bit more quiet to people just watching the game. So it's easy to overrate what we're seeing out of Adu Thiro. I'm kind of falling into that trap though of buying into the potential and being enamored with that. So I really would prefer to not see him move just because I think there is a real upside here. And stylistically, he's the type of player that I think if you're going to take a gamble on, this is what they've been needing to gamble on rather than small guards. It's bouncy, athletic wings. Yes, there's questions about can he shoot? He's not going at the 36th pick in the draft. If everybody believed he could shoot, he's going way earlier than that. So I do think there's a lot of upside here. I would be loath to move him if I can find a way around it. But if you told me that packaging Adu Thiro and Vando is going to turn into a ready-to-go wing that plays both sides of the ball right now, okay, you got Luka right now, you go make that play, and then you just recognize that, hey, 2 years from now, a dude Thiro could be great, and maybe we're kicking ourselves for this, but we're going to go ahead and make that move right now. I think I could get on board with something like that. I'm not attaching him to somebody just to move salary and say, okay, now we've got a little bit more flexibility, which again is kind of the conversation we already had. But I am high on a dude Thiro, but I'm actively trying not to buy too much into the hype, because I recognize the things he does well are very, very loud and very easy to get excited about. And the things he does poorly are things that could keep him off the floor. JJ Redick would, his hair turned grayer as the season went on. I would think there will be moments where a dude Thiro causes JJ to like actively have gray hairs pop up. We'll be able to see it in real time. So I'm trying to temper my expectations for him still.
I agree with you. I think it just comes down to, if you could get Walker Kessler or Peyton Watson with that additional cap space, I would do that. And also, like, I think in a vacuum, I would rather have a first round pick than a do. I still think that is a more valuable asset than him. And, you know, there's a reason why he was a second round pick. But if it's just to dump the Vando contract, I still think at that point I would prefer to keep a do and not just dump it just to dump it. I think you need to have a tangible opportunity to improve the roster with a starting level player to warrant getting off of his contract. I was just curious here, thoughts on that. But Trevor, appreciate the time. I will see you in less than 24 hours.
That's right.
I'm sure everyone listening and watching right now is already following you, but anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, I mean, just come hang out with us on the Lakers Collective. Everybody, come hang out. We go live twice a week. Jason joins us, and it's a good time. We break everything down, take a lot of questions and comments. Last few shows, we've even gone on, I think, some interesting tangents where we've wound up, like, we didn't intend to at the start of the show, but we wound up going down a rabbit hole on a specific player or whatnot. So it's a lot of fun. Come hang out over in the Lakers Collective. Of course, you guys can find me over at Lakers Nation, the Basketball Bulletin, Front Office Show, all that kind of stuff. But do try to stop in. If you don't get to catch us live, the shows do live on after the fact on the channel, so you can go find us there as well. But we appreciate all the feedback, all the encouragement that we've received since the three of us teamed up there.
It's been awesome. I'm looking forward to tomorrow's episode. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. For those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review. I'll be back later in the week. I will talk to you then.